Welcome to Juice Podcast. I'm Emily Harmon.
I'm Gwen Douglas.
And today we're talking about amphora, clay.
Clay wines.
Clay. Clay is actually not a nice word to say, is it?
No, it's not that nice. It's not a sexy word.
It's not a sexy word.
But makes some pretty interesting wines.
Yes. What do we know about amphora? What is an amphora, I think, is the best way to start here.
So I think of amphora as being a closed vessel made of clay that's then put in a situation where air doesn't come in. But I could be completely wrong. I actually don't know much about it.
Was essentially, it's a clay vessel. And actually, if anybody has watched any... even if you'd watch Hercules, the Disney animation Hercules, you would have seen amphora in that. So if you've been to any sort of ruins, Greco-Roman ruins, ancient Greek ruins, and you've seen these...
vase.
Yes, vase-shaped containers. These were what wine was originally stored in. So originally, I think this was actually originally developed for transport, but also for storage.
So are they... air-free? Like, is air not supposed to travel into them?
They're not air-free. Actually, the amphora is quite a primitive
vessel
when it comes to winemaking. So but it's very fascinating.
Jar. Okay.
Very, very fascinating, actually. And because of that, I think it started to come back. So, obviously, like any industry, technology develops and everybody sort of slowly moves forward with modern technology, modern techniques. However, what we've seen... in the last 20 years, we've seen the amphora coming back into winemaking. And there is a reason for that. We will get to that.
Okay.
But historically, this is how wine was
made and
stored
transported.
Okay. Yeah, so they're little... I think the archaeologists call them doliums, the small ones that would be filled with wine and used to be transported.
Okay, like a small, personal stash.
Yeah, and you often saw them, like, actually in the bottom of boats, because of the way that a boat is shaped, they would store perfectly there. So the whole bottom of the boat would be lined with all these sort of doliums filled with olive oil or wine or whatever. So it's quite interesting when you look at it. But unfortunately, because of the fact that they're made from clay, they are quite fragile. So even though you're transporting them...
you can't bump them.
Well, they could break quite easily. Even installing them... so now today we're seeing a lot more amphora, which are also known as tinajas in Spain, or tinaja, and
quevri in Georgia.
They are very fragile. One, you have to be really careful how you transport them to that place, and two, when you're installing them into the ground, if you're installing them into the ground is another question.
So are they installing them into the ground or into water as a way to, like, make it that there's no oxygen? Is that part of
it's nothing, so it's got nothing to do with oxygen.
I'm curious about this, because I've seen that some amphora is put, like, to the bottom of the ocean, or people are doing it in water, and obviously that's a way to, like, stop oxygen. Would it not be? To put it underwater?
So... I haven't seen any amphora going underwater.
I only know this because someone told me that they bought a champagne that was like one bottle had been...
but that's the bottle, not the amphora.
So it had been aged, one in a barrel and one in amphora and one
champagne.
Underwater. Yeah, it was a weird...
but where would they be putting that underwater?
I have no idea.
Okay, we'll have to research that off camera.
I could be just making it up.
I think,
anyway.
The reason why some amphora are buried in the ground is that the ground acts as a natural temperature control.
I was going to say, is it temperature? Okay.
Yeah, so because of actually, even if it's hot or cold or whatever, the ground has a bit more of a moderating
temperature. And I guess water does too, depending on where you are, if there aren't currents going around putting amphora in
water. Yeah, the difficult part with water, again, I'm not an amphora maker or somebody working with amphora, so I could never say... this with 100%, but what I would assume is it's quite a problematic vessel to use underwater because it can't
fragile,
be sealed completely. Because of the way that they seal amphoras are quite different, so you can seal them
like with wax or something.
So the way the Georgians use the quevri amphora is that they're always buried in the ground.
Okay.
So you have this natural temperature control. So you never have to pay for any temperature control. It's actually once you've bought your amphora, it's a very cheap way of making wine actually. And this historically is how wine was originally made. So somebody produces a quevri. It's just also good to point out that actually the quevri now in Georgia and the production of quevri is UNESCO.
A heritage.
Yeah, it's intangible cultural heritage.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So now, because of that, it's slowly coming back. Because I think Alice Firing wrote a book on Georgia and also on the use of the Kvevri. And at that point, there was only 3 people producing Kvevri in the whole of Georgia.
Wow.
Yeah. And equally, there's very few people producing amphora and good amphora.
Wow.
One amphora, like 1,000-litre amphora, takes... Three weeks to produce. So you have to build it, and apparently you sort of, with the clay, you build a layer, then you add another layer, and that goes on for days. That takes around 2 weeks. And then you have like this big fire pit, like a kiln.
You're crazy, to fire it.
To fire it, but then you have to build a wall to seal it in with the fire.
Yeah, totally.
And it's a wood-fired fire. Leave it in there for a week, then you have to break down the wall. Obviously, you wouldn't do it with just one. I'm sure there's more than one in there. But still, it's a very... time-consuming.
Totally. Wow. I never actually thought about the construction of them.
Yeah, it's incredible. So
and
then...
you keep one, you use it again, or that's...
Yeah, it's like you use it until it's broken.
Like having a barrel until you, like, bust it open.
Yeah, I mean, they're a quivery that live for years.
Oh, amazing.
Like, centuries.
I guess I never really thought about them being made.
Yeah. Silly. You just have to keep them clean. But... you have to make sure that you've secured... if you're burying them, you have to make sure you've secured them well, because if movement or there's rocks nearby, then you...
Then you run the risk of cracking and breaking.
Yeah, and then if you fill it, you've lost all that wine. So,
what a nightmare.
You know, 1,000 litres of wine is a lot.
Oh my God.
It'd be awful.
Yes.
So then... but essentially, so this is really the very fundamental, quite basic way of producing wine. So you would... we'll get to that.
Oh,
but
so
you would... you, so you've got this buried in the ground. So, like, say we were here, you just see, like, a ring.
Like a hole.
A hole, exact. Yes, a hole is more apt. Not a ring. The hole would be there, and the wine would get filled in, usually whole cluster or whole grapes going in, whether it's white grapes or red grapes. Everything gets chucked in.
Okay.
Then it's left, like, fermentation happens or whatever after fermentation. It's then sealed. Okay. Over winter. So they would do this by either putting another clay lid on the top or a piece of glass and sealing it with mastic.
Okay.
Like mastic gum. Yeah. So that would like keep
Make it airtight.
Yeah. And then leaving it over winter and then not touching it, reopening one up.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's quite interesting. And actually when you go to Georgia, you see people doing this on their property, in their garden, in their garage sort of thing. So it's a very, very different world.
And
what's wonderful about it is you're seeing preserved history without any influence of modern technology.
Amazing.
And I think the way you can clean it is a number of different ways. So I think you clean it slightly differently depending when you're using the amphora. So if you're using it before fermentation or whatever, I think there are some people that burn sulfur.
Yeah, it's
but there are also people that I think they use it's like a cherry wood brush to clean it. Lime
things that would like be natural into,
and you can seal them inside with different bees, like I think different types of wax and different things. So there's that, maintaining your quivery that way. Removing the wine is very primitive. So basically, when you go to some of these places in Georgia, well, it's not even that. So if you imagine like a large wooden spoon or like a wooden stick with like a bucket on it.
They're just scooping it out by hand. Oh wow, that's
time consuming, and it's all done by hand.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
I was like, is it going to be some sort of?
But they do like, because of actually what's quite interesting is actually not all of the Georgian wines that you taste, even though they're unfined, they're not filtered, and
is there a natural
skin
sort
contact?
Of...
they naturally settle all the grapes, bring it down,
amazing.
So then you clear off quite clear juice actually. So it's quite
like
interesting.
Making a clear broth.
Yeah.
You're just scooping off the top.
Yeah, totally.
And just leaving whatever's left on the bottom.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So whether you bury it or not, in Spain and in Italy, you see quite a bit of amphora. Not everybody buries them. So this sort of trend going back to amphora and quivery actually started around 20 years ago. Quite an eccentric natural wine producer. I don't even know if I want to say natural wine producer, but very eccentric, iconic Italian wine producer called Josco Gravner.
Ah,
went to Georgia, saw what they were doing, and started ordering quivery. And I think this is why I talked about the fragility of quivery, because actually when he was travelling back and the wines were, the quivery were being sent over, I think something like 50% of them got broken, which is a huge expense.
It's funny because you can get some good Gravner. You can get the Gravner around the corner here at a very nice little Italian place.
You'll have to tell me the name of that place. And
who don't want to tell me about it.
Yes. Off camera. And so he started producing skin contact wine, long skin contact, in Amphora, made the Georgian way with local grape varieties. So now he's just focusing just on Robolo. His daughter Marta is now much more involved in the production. But really, Gravno was the catalyst for the trend kicking back off, because a lot of people followed suit. However, there are still pockets of Europe where the Amphora
tradition.
So I was in Segovia last year in central Spain, north of Madrid, visiting a producer called Ismael Gonzalo, who works with Tinajas, Spanish Tinajas, and that area has always used Tinajas.
Right, so it's just a historical.
And people would come locally, they would fill up, like, whatever vessel they had from home, they would bring them, fill them up from the Tinajas, but they weren't doing long aging, they would just have the Tinajas run off the fluid, fill up people's vessels, and it would be empty for the next time they fill it. So a lot of clay around there, a lot of local people producing it. And actually the Amphora that Foradori use comes from Spain.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
it comes from Spain. So the Tinajas, Rafael Bernabe, or Bernabe Navarro, they were making wines in Tinajas stuff. So, yeah.
I'm ready to taste some.
Yeah, sorry. I've just completely machine-gunned at you. Like, give me a break.
No, I'm really excited because we have a white and a red, which is cool. And since I don't know that much about Amphora, but I do know the wine that you've brought.
Yes.
We've had it before. And we were lucky enough. You've known them for years, but I was lucky enough last year to have a nice chat with
John
and
Ramaz and Shotta, who are all working with Quevery.
Yes, super nice gentlemen, good drinkers, and make lovely wines. So I'm excited to try this one again. Or I don't know if I've had this one.
So this is the 2012 Mitsvani from Pheasant's Tears. So Georgia has a little special place in my heart, and particularly the wines from John, because actually I've learned so much about Georgian wine through John. He's such a good spokesman for Georgia.
He's such a charismatic fella, and there's a nice energy about him. Oh my god. To use the bloody tank opener. Thankfully, I don't have to deal with a capsule today.
I know, that's why I passed it to you. Oh, that's a good trick, actually, what Gwen's doing. I think that's good to know, is that you can always rub the wax. Rub it to make it easier. I know.
They insert weird, and it's a red wax top.
Yeah.
It's really awkward. But it's a good way to try and warm up the wax a little bit so that you don't end up with, like, little bits everywhere.
It's a different technique. I've not seen that technique before.
Sorry. I just thought I'd get all the edges.
It's a bit mean.
It's a bit mean to make me use this bloody opener every time.
I know. You can, Gwen has to use the opener every time she uses the word Gewurztraminer, but the wax is very perfectly removed, yeah.
Hum with no wax bits. I'm very proud of that. My technique works. Look at this pretty colour. Beautiful.
So Mitsvani is the name of the grape variety. So like pretty much every single wine that comes from Georgia, made with an indigenous grape variety that almost nobody can pronounce, but Mitsvani. And this is coming from Kaheti. Equally challenging if you're not familiar with the name. But Kaheti, we're about an hour or so outside of Tbilisi. And this is this eastern part of Georgia, where it's the tradition of skin contact wine, where it's a bit warmer, still remains. Skin contact wine, obviously in Quevery as well, so in Amphora.
I want to know how you describe the smell of this one.
Smoky.
Yeah, smoky.
Stone fruit. I get a lot of apricot, a lot of peach, slightly exotic though, almost pineapple.
Yeah, I can see the pineapple a bit. I think it's a tough one for
like
me.
It's like tinned pineapple.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just something that's sort of tinny, but it's... I think sometimes the Georgian ones I struggle with on the nose because of the smoke. I think the way smoke is taken in is always a bit different. But definitely like drinking these.
Smoke, and then there's almost like this like crushed, like almost like flower, like petal, like I don't know.
I do feel like it tastes floral smokier edge. To me than it smells. Maybe that's just me.
But it's definitely, it's quite exotic. You get touches of honey. This almost floral edge to the wine as well.
And also because there's a lot of acidity that yeah. also like...
Yeah.
Hmm. I mean, also, was it last year or 2 years ago that you did the Supra at Michelberger?
Last year.
Was it last year? Was it the year before?
Yeah, because we did the podcast recording with them after.
No, the so year before, the big Supra.
Oh, no, but we did two. So we did one last year and one okay. the year before
I went
that.
To the one the year before. Yeah. And actually, I think that was a really great thing for me, understanding these wines more, is eating it with the food that they eat.
Yeah. And by the time this podcast goes live, I will have been to Georgia again.
Okay.
But unfortunately, that won't inform this podcast. But, yeah. It's interesting because actually it says on the back, like, a note of this particular varietal is white rose. And I actually, when that's pointed out to me, I can see that.
Totally.
It's like white rose on the borderline of musk.
Yes. It's a really interesting, like... Yeah, it's a really interesting one. It's definitely one of those that makes you keep going back. Because
but again, obviously an aromatic... we did aromatics already with skins. It's obviously an aromatic grape variety with some skin contact.
The smokiness is really fun.
But I love the acidity in this one.
Yeah, it's super hot. I mean, look at the legs on this bad boy too. It's like...
So you asked before, we haven't talked about this, but you asked before about, okay, use an amphora, it doesn't breathe. It does breathe. So yeah, why would we use an amphora other than the romantic story of it being a bit of preserved history? So the reasons why we would use amphora are... that the wine does breathe a little bit, but a lot
depends on the clay because it is porous. Clay is porous,
so clay breathes less than oak, but obviously more than stainless steel. Right.
So it's an in-betweener.
Yes, so that's one of the reasons is that actually you have a little bit of this development coming from this like little bit oxidizing, of interaction with oxygen. Yeah, and I did write down a few facts about that. So, 250-liter amphora. Breathes or the evaporation rate is the same as a 1,500-liter vat
of stainless steel.
Yeah, and then a 2,000-liter vat to 3,000-liter vat has the same evaporation rate as a 400-liter amphora. So it's much
lower.
Yeah. Okay. And a 100-liter amphora is the same as a barrique.
But I guess it's kind of nice because you do get to then. Get that little bit of development from the oxygen without having to worry about it happening too quickly or things changing too much. So you can control it maybe a bit better.
Yeah, so it breathes, but what the reason
it's
why...
Slower.
Yeah, well, it breathes, so the wine can develop. Two, the interesting and fascinating part about the amphora is that it doesn't impart any flavour.
Flavour, right. So you get the best of both worlds, where you get the best of no flavour like stainless steel, but a little oxygen like
oak. Yeah, it doesn't impart flavour, and it doesn't impart colour either. So the colour doesn't change of the wine.
Is there another method that would give you the same results?
We can use concrete as well, but concrete doesn't breathe as well.
No, I think concrete is quite dense, I think.
Yeah. I think the thing as well with the amphora that a lot of people talk about is also the shape, that there's like this sort of
roundness
and movement. It's an organic shape as well.
So
that's something that's discussed that I don't know enough about.
Oh, I'd be curious to look into
that. Yeah, that is something that's interesting to look into. And everybody says it doesn't impart flavour, and I would challenge that slightly because I do know that there are some wines that I feel like I can taste that they've been in amphora.
The type of clay.
Yeah. And it also depends if the amphora is clean, because there are different faults that come with an amphora. So that's also the downside, that if you're not maintaining your amphora, there are bacteria that can be present.
But then I would also argue that depending on whether you bury it in earth or not, or what kind of earth you're burying it in, it also has density and an air movement that's going to be lower and slower or higher, depending on how packed the earth is. What the earth life is in that area, what kind of water is going on in that area. I think there are lots of things that could, like variables that could change.
There is that, and there is the bacterial element. If you're being not so clean, there have been some wines that I've tasted. So I've tasted quite a lot of wine.
What would be the salt on this?
So I spoke to John about this, John Werdemann from, I don't want to say it in a German way, John Werdemann from Pheasant's Tears.
We're conditioned.
But I talked to him about it because I said, well, sometimes I see this fault in amphora wine. And it's not that they're corked, because of course the wines do have cork, but it's the aroma and the flavour is very similar to cork taint, okay, but almost has this seaweed kombu edge in terms of flavour, which is very odd. So I said to him, I was like, why am I smelling these wines that initially people think they're corked, but I know they're not corked.
But it's not,
because there are particular ones where it's in every single bottle. It's just not possible that they're all corked.
Yes.
And the,
so then
and
it's a production.
It's seaweedy. So that's down to, he said there's something,
it's a wet bacteria,
muffa, and it's some kind of almost like a reduction that sometimes blows off. I'm not always convinced by that, but it is something that's present. And that's, I think it's with when you're not maintaining your quivering.
I'm going to call it damp. I'm going to call it damp, because if it's buried underground and it's wet, it's going to be some sort of damp bacteria.
Fungus. I totally think it's a fungus.
It's, yeah, yeah.
Because TCA anyway is totally. That. So it's, I think it's
in the same
somewhere,
family.
Yeah. So I don't know enough about that, but I think that's something that's on my little research
list. So actually, if someone
list.
Knows some stuff about that, we'd love to hear about it.
I would absolutely die to hear stuff about that.
So I would love to know.
Yeah. But yeah. But this one doesn't have that, which is
really
nice.
No, it's really nice.
It's also lovely to try wine, actually, that's got 7 years of age.
Yeah.
But all of this fruit...
It's so fresh and lively.
I could kind of imagine you wearing a perfume like this.
Totally.
Peachy apricot, slightly exotic. White
it's
rose,
also a little smoky,
floral and smoky.
And a bit masculine. It's like a good yin and yang.
Yeah.
There's a bit of everything going on. I also would love to...
The more I go back, the more of this floral character that comes out. But every time I try Mitsvani, it always reminds me of like tin peaches, tin apricots, tin pineapple. Just like,
but I do think the floral thing works.
Slightly musky body shop.
Because I also think of
white
like,
musk,
like a hay field. You know, there is a little bit of that, like
that's
florally
nice.
Hay field, like
kind
of thing about it. It smells really nice.
The end of summer.
Exactly.
Mm.
It totally has that like lazy autumn day. Oh, very nice. So what is I mean, I'm trying to recall what we ate. Like, what I want to eat with this is, like, barley. I want to eat, like, a beef and barley soup with this.
What's that Chinese soup? Not koji, congee.
Congee, yeah, like a big hearty soup.
Yeah, that'd be amazing with the meat.
I think a beef barley, like, pub soup would be great with this. Something barley-ish, like, there's something sort of
this,
grainish
like,
about it.
I think game.
Yeah, totally.
Pigeon.
Yes, oh
this
my
would
god,
be amazing
like a raw
with pigeon.
But I also think that hay and pigeon work really
maybe
well
not
together.
Maybe not a raw pigeon.
No, but I like the really
like
pink.
A, yeah, yeah.
Whenever I eat pigeon out, it's always like really...
Pink.
And in the last few times I've had it, it's like hay smoked infused or whatever. This would be phenomenal with it.
Yeah, pigeon, game birds, chicken hearts.
That's a great idea.
A little bit of offal.
Duck hearts.
Even like calf's liver.
I'm not into the liver.
For the vegetarians out there, get on the barley. For the meat eaters,
yes.
Liver.
Yeah, there's something really like
hearts.
Earthy about this. You want to eat something that's, like, of the earth and, like, down and dirty.
Yeah.
It's good. I like it. Very nice.
It could only be Georgia.
I know. It's pretty special.
I also think maybe even, like, hard cheeses.
Pecorino. There's, like,
maybe
Italian cheeses would be really good with this.
Not blue, but, like...
Imagine like
slightly soft or even wash rind, possibly, but not too
Granny
funky.
Smith apple with like big chunks of hard pecorino on top of like
that would be really
Parmesan.
Nice. Sheep's milk cheeses.
Because it's
a little bit
it's,
funky.
I think because it's got enough character that it can get away with pairing with things that have.
And John always
character.
Said to me as well with these wines, think about like onion and garlic, which are almost impossible
to pair
with usually.
Yeah.
These are robust enough that
totally.
Actually.
You could put raw garlic with this and it would be fine. Because raw garlic is a hard sell for
there's
a lot of
people. There's quite a lot of garlic in Georgian food.
Yeah. And lots of floral elements, like a lot of the herbs they were bringing or spices were sort of dried flowers and that hay sort of texture with like wildflowers that are dried down and used as spices.
Mm. But it's interesting, isn't it? All those tannins and then this kind of smooth, round texture that you see in the wine. It's really different to a wine that's been in wood.
Totally. No, I really like... every time I have this, and you know, it's not something I buy for myself that often, but whenever I have it, I'm always, interested. It definitely, like, makes you keep going back. It's going to be a hard act to follow, actually, because that was pretty delicious.
I mean, don't blow it down. Let's see what
you got. I haven't had this
one
before.
I do wonder if we've done it the right way around.
The right way around. Because
sorry,
I don't know, I haven't tried this one before. And I was at Passion Vin and I asked about what amphora wines they had. And this was the suggestion. And I liked the label, and since I'm a sucker for a nice label.
I went with it. So let's see. Mephisto.
So, Mephisto from Domaine de la Coupe. So this is coming from the Loire Valley.
I mean, I like the colour.
It smells good. What's the vintage? I'm assuming, is that the Cuvée MM? Is that the vintage?
You're going to make me make some sort of...
2015?
Yeah.
I don't know what I got.
I was like, no, don't make me do maths.
Just give me Roman numerals. I've got us covered.
I should know what the fuck is going on. Actually, Roman numerals. That should be,
yes, I was going to say.
Oh, it does smell quite good. It's very meaty, actually.
Meaty. Oh, I was going to say that earthy, but like now this paprika, red pepper thing is coming out.
It's making my mouth water, actually. Oh, like Hungarian, like paprika, totally. Like a smoked...
Or do you know what?
Yum.
Think about your favourite pizza.
Yeah.
Nduja.
Nduja.
Almost chorizo. Like it's this smoky, meaty, spicy paprika.
Goulash.
You and your fucking goulash. Mm. Goulash, ratatouille. It's like anything with some kind of tomato element. You're
basically
just...
anything right out of the 1970s. Bring it on. I'm ready. And actually, it tastes so much lighter. It's a very easy drinker.
We should have done it the other way around.
We should have.
Lessons in life.
But maybe it's...
How lovely are those tannins? They're so, it's so fine nice. And supple.
This is actually very nice.
Mm. Oh, I'm a big fan of that wine.
Mmm. I love this little, like, meaty...
It's very soft and, yes, so delicate. but intricate at the same time. Mm.
That's very nice. Oh, I like a nice surprise. Because I'm always willing to try stuff at wine shops, you know, that I go in and I ask for advice. And I love to get dealer's choice on stuff. And sometimes it's a hit, but sometimes... I'm going to be honest, it's more... I would say that I have more misses than I have hits if I let someone decide. Because, of course, like, everyone's taste is going to be different. But I really love trying everything because then sometimes you get pointed in a new direction. And it's good to try new things. So this is a great pick.
I love that it's got this tomato-y, again... Mm. This tomato, almost tomato stem, borderline ketchup, dried ketchup, it's almost really nice. Where it's like a little bit spicy at the same time, paprika, really nice. It's got this sort of red pepper note, but it's now the more that's in the glass, a little bit more lifted, the fruit's starting to come through, but classic Cabernet Franc, I think.
And I did say to her, when she said it was Cabernet Franc, I did say that I love a Cabernet.
I love a little
Frankie. Yeah.
I like to hang with Frankie.
I love to hang with Frank, and I think that this is... he's not staring me wrong right now.
So this apparently, though, is a mixture of amphora and a little bit of Old Barrel as well.
Ah, so it's... I didn't know that it was a mix.
Someone did their fucking homework before they showed up today.
Not me.
Someone did your homework.
Yeah.
I can imagine you at school just like...
That wasn't me.
I need the math. I know, you totally wouldn't.
I was the best student.
Well,
how did I end up a tattooer? We don't know about.
Well, this is why Gwen's going to be using this bottle opener for the next 5 episodes.
The tag opener forever.
Every time she doesn't do her homework, she is disciplined by
this. So I'm
going to
get really good at using that shitty opener by the end of the season.
No! You're going to get really good at doing your homework.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
So
15 months in a mixture of amphora and old oak. And
so then how do they mix it? They're just like putting half of it in amphora and half
I don't know
in
if it's
oak,
half half
just a bit
because
of
I didn't
some.
Do it so depth because it gave me very little
but I guess you would want
the period was so tiny
that... So I'm guessing that they would do that because they want to have some of the oakiness and the vanillin, or whatever flavor they're getting from oak.
What are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say like vanilla flavor.
Sounds of vanilla.
Yes.
Vanillin. Yeah, but I don't think this has any vanillin.
No, well, they're trying to get...
Why are we saying...
I don't know.
Eight times in one episode.
Are they trying to get... I guess they want some of what's happening in the oak and then some of what's happening in amphora. Obviously, they wouldn't
or
do it otherwise.
Maybe, I mean... This sounds a bit cynical. It could be that they only
it's
have a limited amount of amphora and they decided
fair
to
enough.
Mixture.
Sometimes
or it could be that, hey, we want a little bit more of oxygenation by this vessel,
right.
So they wanted a mixture just to add some complexity.
Totally. Because I can see that,
the
like,
ones change. Right. Maybe originally they were going to make two separate wines, but then they thought they tasted better blended.
Yeah, cool.
Mm-hmm. I honestly wouldn't know the correct answer without speaking
but
to the
wine
maker.
But there are many answers possible, which I think is interesting enough.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
The many reasons why you would do this.
But again, what you see with this amphora, the texture of the wine is slightly different. Again, it's got this kind of like fine sort of smooth edge.
Totally.
It's almost like someone sort of airbrushed.
Yes, totally.
The edges
there
of
is
the
like
wine.
Very soft in your mouth. Very nice. Mmm. It might be just that I'm hungry, but I really want to eat pigeon. I'm into it.
Game birds.
Yeah, game birds.
This would also be really nice because it's got almost a bloody quality to it.
But these are actually very interesting examples, and I think actually nice ends of the spectrum, bookends, because I think that where the pheasant's tears is... It's so exceptional in its taste, and it's so different. This is also very beautiful, but it's very subtle in the ways that maybe Pheasant's Tears isn't.
Well, Pheasant's Tears is full-blown orange as well. Probably longer skin contact. Much more structured more sort of savoury. A little bit more challenging.
I think it's a nice look at both ways that you can do this.
This is also a wine you could give to people and
they wouldn't even notice. No, they wouldn't notice.
They might just think, it's amazing, I'll just have a little splash more.
But it's very nice. They're both very nice. Oh.
No.
Let's calm down. Oh my God, I'm doing it. It's being placed in front of me. So, I actually don't
know. I feel like you should get I should get you a little brooch.
Maybe. I'll just like pin it to me.
A brooch that says... I'm wearing this because I like
Shmina. Yeah. Maybe I'll make a shirt.
But I don't think don't make a shirt based on that. That is a waste of time. No one's buying that shirt. You're the only person wearing that shirt.
Probably.
Which you could just wear it every time we record.
It'll be my uniform. But I think that... Is there something that we should add in closing? Because I don't know... I mean, I think that there's like... Making things in amphora is... You know, even though it's a special way of making something or it's different to the norm, I'm not necessarily sure. Is it something that you can pick out? Like if you're tasting a wine, you know, whereas you can taste like new oak or old oak or French oak or American oak, is this something that when you're tasting a wine, you're like, that's amphora?
I think it's difficult. I think it would be quite difficult to do that early doors if you weren't familiar. I think I would be... I think you could, if you are working in wine, you're tasting a lot of wine, or wine is really your passion. I think it gets a bit too geeky and a little bit more complicated to do that. However, as we've seen in these wines, and the point I tried to make before is this sort of
this roundness,
smooth,
the softness,
softer texture, the way that you feel the tannins is slightly different.
Right.
The only way for you to learn and see where that's coming from is
to
try.
Yeah.
So to try... You know, there are some producers that make wines in stainless steel, in amphora, and then in barrel. Like, it would be then interesting to try them side by side.
So this is what I was going to say, like, my friends that
The difference between the difference between
something.
But the difference between drinking Radicon and Gravner is absolutely huge. And one, okay, it comes down to the vineyards. Two, it comes down to winemaking. But Gravner's using amphora, Quevri, and... Radicon's using large oak, and you feel it. The shape of the tannins is different. The style of the wine's different, and that's not just down to the winemaking.
Right.
That's also down to the vessel.
So, let's do it. So, otherwise, we'd like to hear: are there wines that you love that after this episode or before this episode, you knew they were made in amphora, and you think that there's something special about them, or wines that you think we should taste? Is there a plate? I don't know. What do you know about amphora? I want to know. Because I don't know much. She knows clearly a lot more. And otherwise, you can find us on Instagram at juice.podcast.
On Twitter at juice_podcast.
You can find us online at juice.show, where you can get a beautiful tote bag as pictured here in the video. And you should check out our YouTube channel because we've switched over to the visual.
We are. So you can see our faces.
You can see us. We can see how ridiculous
we are.
You
can see all of the frowns.
And you can see the nuances.
Nuances is a nice way to put it, Gwen.
Nuanced. Yes. We're now nuanced.
Yeah.
Streaming live on YouTube. Not live.
Yes.
Cheers.
So, one last thing. If you are tuning in and continuing to tune in. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Apple, we would love you to subscribe, even to Spotify. The YouTube travel channel. I've had too much wine. But we would love to stay connected.
Until next week.